We're doing the Chazon Ish Emunah uBitachon. We're up to page Lamed Beis. The Chazon Ish had been pounding home the idea that it's not enough to have a conceptual understanding that God runs the world. A Jew also must understand the laws of the Torah so he knows how to lead his life. And the Chazon Ish was pointing out how the sages were valued based on their halachic knowledge. Having a knowledge of God running the world is just the starting point. Emunah and bitachon are the starting point. Leading a life of Judaism involves knowing halacha and applying it in life. And now he's bringing another proof. He quoted from Tractate Kiddushin, where a person engages a woman and says, "You are engaged to me. Hare at mekudeshet li al minat, on condition she'ani talmid, that I am a student of Torah." So the Talmud said, we don't test him to be as smart as Rabbi Shimon ben Azai. He has to know a lot, but he doesn't have to know as much as Rabbi Shimon ben Azai. If a person engages a woman and says, "I am engaging you, harei at mekudeshet li al minat shani chacham, on the condition that I am a chacham, I am a learned rabbi," we don't say he has to be as smart as Rabbi Akiva and his friends, but he has to be learned, as the Talmud explained. So we see that when the rabbis wanted an example of a top student or a top rabbi, they chose Ben Azai and Rabbi Akiva. So the Chazon Ish said, well, let's see, what were Ben Azai and Rabbi Akiva valued for? So we see an example of this in Tractate Sota, where Abaye had a day where he was feeling like he had top clarity. He told his students, "I'm like Ben Azai today. Today you could ask me anything you want. I have clarity. I've reviewed my learning. I'm focused. Now you could ask whatever you want." And then the Talmud says, "Uvekulu nitpelu talmidehen achrei achazatan al sha'a shel harchavat da'atan." In every instance that a rabbi would say, "Today I'm like Ben Azai," so the students wouldn't come and say, "Rabbi, well, explain to me the secrets of how the universe started or why wicked people have it good or righteous people suffer." They didn't come and ask them philosophy. They didn't come and ask them ethics. They said, "Ooh, if you're on the top level, so let me ask you some questions in halacha." L'sha'olam tevar halacha. They took advantage of the moment and said, "Okay, if you have such clarity, then explain to me. I have a question in halacha." L'manu debanizkar stam rav godlo shel Ben Azai. We see from here, it was self-evident to them, that when we mention the greatness of Ben Azai, we mean his greatness in halacha. Val shamar Rava hareini ke Ben Azai, and in Tractate Erevin, Rava says, "Today I have clarity like Ben Azai." So then the students asked him, "Nitchayev liot baki bilchot eruv, v'shaluta puchim bekama." They started asking him details in the laws of Erevin. They said, "Oh, you have clarity today? Okay, so then we have some halachic questions for you." And Abaye was suddenly forced to be an expert in the laws of Egla Arufa. That's what we started discussing last class. They asked him, if you have two corpses, one on the top of the other, how do you measure which city is closest? They're asking him intricate details in halacha. If you have clarity, then today you'll have answers. Uvevchorot nunchet parich, and in Tractate Bechoros, the Gemara asks, let's see this, the full story in the Gemara. The Gemara in Tractate Bechoros quotes a machlokes tanoim. We have a disagreement between the tanoim, the rabbis of the Mishnah. It appears in Tractate Bechoros. It also appears in Tractate Rosh Hashanah. An argument between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Shimon. When does the year begin for the tax year for the tithe of animals? We know you have to take a tithe of the animals and give to the Kohen. So every year has its own tithe. When does the count start? Machlokas, whether it's the first of Elul or the first of Tishrei. So Tanya Amar Ben Azai. So Ben Azai, remember he's the top student, he said, being that we have two arguing opinions, ha'elulin mitasrin atzman. So then on the month of Elul is really that month is the questionable month. The animals born in the month of Elul, that's what they're arguing about. Do they belong to the previous tax season, to last year? Or is that already the new tax season, next year? So what you got to do? So they're a standalone. They don't join either group. You have to tithe them separately. That's what Ben Azai says. So the Gemara asks, wait a second, Ben Azai, that's what Ben Azai, the Tana, said. Velechzi taima deman mistaber. Why couldn't Ben Azai just see which one made more sense? Why didn't Ben Azai give a halachic ruling? Vechitema lo matzikaya tama. You maybe you'll say, Ben Azai couldn't figure it out. He wasn't smart enough to know who was more correct between them. Vatanya, but we have the following quote. Guys, before we read this quote, we have to understand who Ben Azai was. Who Ben Azai was. So because he was so young, they called him by his father's name. Ben Azai was really, he died young. So he was always called Ben Azai. His real name was Rabbi Shimon Ben Azai. But we rarely mention his first name because he was so young. So he was known by his father's name. I do not know. I think if you give me a minute, I'll check. I don't remember how young he died. Who was Ben Azai? Before we read the next quote, we just need an intro. So Ben Azai was so young that he's known by his father's name. And Ben Azai never got married. He's the one example in Shas, like Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Moshe is the one prophet who never got married. So Ben Azai also never got married. Moshe was married, but he left his wife. Okay, right. He never rejoined his wife after receiving the Torah.
Got back together?
No, they lived in the same tent, but they had separate beds. That's what Miriam asked her. Why don't you ever put on makeup? And she said, he's not interested. It makes no difference. She asked her, why don't you put on any jewelry? And Tzipora said, it's irrelevant. That's why Miriam and Aaron were talking about him. Hey, why does he do that? He had children from beforehand. Gershom and Eliezer, right? So, Ben Azai never got married because he was so indelved in learning that he said, the world will have to live with other people. Other people will have to create the world because I'm too drawn to Torah. I can't lead a married life. That's how focused he was on Torah. And in Halacha, we actually say this, that every person has to learn Torah and get married unless they're on the level of Ben Azai, that they're so drawn to Torah that they can postpone their marriage, and Ben Azai actually died. One opinion says he got married and got divorced, but the generally accepted opinion is that he never got married. So the Talmud in Tractate Sota has a discussion, how long does the woman have to be alone with this man in order for her to become a Sota? Her husband tells her, I don't want you to be alone with this man, and then she's alone with him, and there are witnesses, so he could take her up to the temple. So different rabbis give different opinions. And the Talmud says each rabbi could estimate in his own married life how long it took for him to be intimate. So Ben Azai gives an opinion. So the Talmud says, how did he give an opinion? He was single. He never got married, right? So how did Ben Azai know? So the Talmud gives us three options. The Talmud says either he was married and got divorced, so he knew from the short time he was married, or he had it on tradition from his Rebbe, or third answer in the Talmud, Sod Hashem Lireyav. Those who fear God get his secrets revealed. So that's some kind of level that's close to prophecy, where if he's Yireyav, one of those God-fearing people, then he merits to have God's secrets revealed to him. That's the third answer in the Talmud here. So that's how Ben Azai knew. So we're talking about someone very, very big when we speak about Ben Azai. Now let's see the next quote. We said, why didn't Ben Azai give a ruling between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir? You have Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir arguing when the beginning of the year is for tithing. Ben Azai says, you have this argument, so you take out the month of Elul, those animals separately. The Talmud asks, why Ben Azai say that? Why not come down with the ruling? Maybe you'll tell me he couldn't figure it out, No. Listen to the following quote. Ben Azai was in yeshiva, and he said, "Kol chachmei Yisrael domin alai keklipat hashum. All the rabbis here are like the peel of garlic next to me. They're all, you know, I can pass. Chutz min hakereach hazeh, except for the bald one. Who's the bald one?
Rabbi Akiva.
Rabbi Akiva. Now, why is he called the bald one? Because they had to keep him in hiding. That was a code name. They couldn't call him Akiva because the Romans wanted him dead. So whenever they spoke about Rabbi Akiva during the time of persecution, he was called Kereach, the bald one. That's why his son, Rabbi Yoshua, is referred to in the Shas as Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha, the son of the bald one. Because there was a period during the persecution when they didn't want to refer to him by name. It was dangerous. So Ben Azai was the top rabbi. He could say, no one here, I'm not worried about anyone here. Now, if any one of us would say that, that would be pretty arrogant, right? Yeah. But we have to have perspective who Ben Azai was. And when Ben Azai was saying that, Ben Azai was telling us a halachic weight. Meaning, remember in those days, when you'd walk into the academy, they sat in rows. And you would choose your seat based on what level you were on. The top student got the first seat, the second student the next seat. And everyone knew where they belonged. There was never an argument, hey, I'm ahead of you, you should really be sitting the seat behind me. It was very clear who was ahead of whom. So when Ben Azai said a line like that, Ben Azai was telling them a halachic ruling. I'm willing to take any of you on, and I'm sure I'm going to win. Meaning, Ben Azai deserves the first seat in the Beis Medrash, which also gives him a certain halachic weight. It wasn't a saying like, no one counts next to me. But again, from our perspective, where we're so partial, where we can only think of how we would say such a line and how arrogant such a line would be if one of us would say it, it's hard for us to hear. For us to think about people that were on that level of purity, we have a few examples of that in Shas, where rabbis spoke about themselves honestly. When you're on that level, you could talk honestly. So back to... Yeah?
It's kind of jarring to take it on oneself, not to marry their children. From a Jewish perspective, I mean, it's nobody can do that if you're aware of it right now. No rabbi would tell you if somebody was, psychologically balanced, but just because he was a brilliant person, that excuses him, right?
Generally, we wouldn't say that. Rav Soloveitchik has an explanation here, where he says that Prur Vu has two components. One is bringing the child to the world, and the second is educating him in the way of Torah. And Rav Soloveitchik says that if one's children are not observant, he didn't really fulfill the mitzvah of Prur Vu. Now, I didn't hear it from him. I heard it from Rav Schechter. My understanding is it's from Rav Soloveitchik, that it's not Rav Schechter's own chidush. So, according to that, he explained that Ben Azai was saying, other people are working on the other component of bringing kids to the world. I'm working on the second component, which really defines the first. Having children and then not educating them, well, then that's not Prur Vu either. But if you have children and I'm educating your kids, and thanks to all the Torah I'm teaching, so then Am Yisrael is continuing their tradition and maintaining their tradition, so I'm fulfilling that part of the Prur Vu. That's how Rav Soloveitchik explained it.
Rav Soloveitchik says that carries incredible weight, but there are other Gadolim who managed to have children.
Right, but you see that Ben Azai was on top of everyone other than Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, it seems, had his children beforehand. He had Rabbi Yoshua before he went to learn Torah. He went with Rabbi Yoshua to learn Torah. Okay, who's on first? Yaakov, yeah.
Is this the same Rav who I heard that they kind of grave, people go to his grave and pray there until they get married?
I have no idea. Don't know. I don't know. Huh?
I thought that there was only one Rav like this, but I thought that there was a Rav who also did get married because of his love of Torah, and just kept this all of his life, and then at the end of his days he regretted it, and said that he came to the grave or whatever, and all the
Ben Uziah?
That's Rav Yonson Ben Uziah. Yeah, but that's... not Ben Azai. I don't know. Yes, Julian.
If somebody does not have a desire for women, like maybe like there's some people that are born gay or they're born asexual. Aren't they exempt from having to marry?
That's a good question for later tonight. That's not our topic. Remind me, we'll get back to it. Okay? Yes.
I can't school any sources in the Rav to be correct. Yes, I'm looking out on this as a good copy, but I have heard it said before about maybe it's a Gemara about the if you don't get married, you not only like you haven't even become a man or whatever yet, you haven't even been challenged in your life yet, and you go up to Shemaim with all of the Torah and everything, that they're still like, huh, what did you do? You know, you didn't get married, you didn't have to really. Work on yourself or whatever.
Okay.
I've heard that, but is that not?
The Gemara says similar things. Okay. So it's a good question. When we learn that line in Talmud, I just brought this as an example. If you want, later we can come back to this point. I see I touched a nerve here. Okay. So we can come back to it later. Let's finish the Chazon Ish and then. Okay. So again, the Talmud. The Chazon Ish was trying to point out, if a person says, I am a Talmid, so the Talmud said, he doesn't have to be as great as Ben Azai. Chazon Ish said, what's the greatness of Ben Azai? We see throughout the Shas, every time we speak about Ben Azai, being great like Ben Azai means being great in the knowledge of Halacha. And then he quoted from Bechoros, that the Talmud asks, you think maybe Ben Azai couldn't figure out who was right? But you see, Ben Azai said that all the other rabbis, he felt he was one up on all of them. There was no one there who came close to him other than Rabbi Akiva. We see here that when Ben Azai speaks about greatness in Torah, he's talking about knowledge of halacha. If Ben Azai is big in Torah, he has to know the laws of tithing an animal. And that's why the Talmud asks, why didn't he give us a bottom line? Why does he say, let's fulfill both opinions? Tell us, is the ruling like Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon? Or is the ruling like Rabbi Meir? So that's the first example we saw. Ben Azai is great in Torah, that means he's great in Halacha. Next example, Rabbi Akiva. Sheirah HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. Our sages say that when Moshe went up to Mount Sinai, God showed him a picture of Rabbi Akiva's Beis Medrash. You guys know the Medrash? Yeah. Rabbi Akiva was teaching, and Moshe had to sit in on a class, and he couldn't understand, right? And Moshe says, you have a person like this, why are you giving the Torah through me? And then God showed Moshe how Rabbi Akiva would die. And Moshe came back with questions, right? And God said, right, you don't understand. Stop talking about it. You don't understand. God tells Moshe there's going to be a man down the road, future generations. Akiva ben Yosef shmo. His name is Akiva, the son of Yosef. He's going to teach from every little line on the words, from every little corner. He's going to teach thousands of halachos. As the Talmud tells us in Tractate Menachos. Matzinu she'emidu chazal et rov godlo. You see, Chazal say, what's the greatness of Rabbi Akiva? That he could teach so many halachot. Ba'alachot ha-chamurot shenegeim va'olot. He could teach you the laws of the blemishes that are defiled, the laws of how we gauge a tent, and where the defilement of Tumas Oel extends. Ukmo shamu Sanhedrin, as the Talmud tells us in Tractate Sanhedrin, Malcha etzel halacha, kalach midberotecha etzel negeim va'olot. The Talmud tells us in Tractate Sanhedrin. Okay, let's see if we have any. Yeah. Oh. We're on a roll tonight. Yeah. Okay. Talmud tells us in Sanhedrin 67b. And with this, we finish this section here. It tells us like this. You guys want a broader version or a limited version?
Broad.
Broad? You want the full? Oh, this is an interesting Gemara. Okay. The Mishnah says we have a mitzvah in Torah called, we have a person called a mesit, one who encourages others to paganism, to idol worship, and then you have a mediach, one who encourages the masses and says, come, let's do idol worship. What is a mechashef? Mechashef is one who actually does something. He does some kind of sorcery. It's not achizat einayim, sleight of hand. Rabbi Akiva says in the name of Rabbi Yoshua, there are two ways to do this trick of causing a bunch of vegetables to gather on their own into a pile. One is real sorcery, and the other one is just you make it look like it, but it's not real sorcery. And one would get the death penalty, and what one would not. Okay, so now this Gemara over here discusses what is sorcery, what is mechashef and mechashef. Are you guys sure you want to go into all this? Yeah?
Yeah.
You want the full thing here? Yes?
So
how many people want us to go into this? Yeah, okay, so we'll do the full quote. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. Okay, our first quote is, the Torah speaks about a woman, mechashefa, and our sages say it doesn't matter if it's a male or a female. So then why did the Torah speak about mechashefa, about a woman? Because it was more common to find women dabbling in sorcery and witchcraft than men, right? Right? You guys all know all the stories of the witch, right? But not the warlock. You have one warlock and 30 witches, right? Okay. The Gemara says, "Mitatan bema." What death penalty do they get? Okay, it says, "Mechashefa lo techaye," and it says, "Lo techaye kol neshama." In the ir anidachat, it says, if there's a whole city that went for paganism, then we go to war against the whole city. So over there, you're going to war with the sword. So to mechashefa that has the word "lo techaye" is also by sword. Rabbi Kiva says, it says, "Mechashefa lo techaye." It says, "Im beima imish lo yichye." If anyone ascends Mount Sinai, doesn't matter if it's a man or an animal, lo yichye. Over there it's talking about stoning, so mechashefa is also stoning. Rabbi Yossi asks him, but I quoted an exact word, lo techaye, and you didn't quote an exact word. You said lo yichye. So why do you rather derive from a word that's not the exact word? Rabbi Akiva said, because I derived from two Jews, and you derived a Jew from a pagan. Okay. I'm skipping the whole back and forth. Next. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. This is a line in Talmud you guys asked about many times. Lama nikra shema kshafim. Why do we call sorcery in Hebrew kishuf? Kishafim. Kishafim is short for few words. Makhishim pamalia shelmala. They deny the heavenly convergence. So kishafim, there's one who decides in heaven, and by them doing the sorcery, it seems like they have powers in this world. That's why they're called kishafim. Ein od milvado, the Gemara says. The Gemara says, it says in the Torah, you were witness at Sinai that there are none other than God. Rabbi Hanina says, afilu ledvar kshafim, even kshafim, they can't stand up. God's the one running the show. So definitely seems from these lines in Talmud that the Talmud understood these were real forces in the world. We've discussed numerous times the argument between Maimonides and Nachmanides and the Gaonim, whether there exists other forces in the world or they do not exist. Hahi iteta, story time. There was a woman. She was trying to get from the dirt that Rabbi Hanina had stood on, because the sorcerers believed that if you could get dirt that someone's standing on, then you could affect them with your witchcraft. So she was trying to get some. Amala imistayet zili avidi. He told her, if you see you can succeed, so then go ahead, try. En od milvadokti. God runs the world. He's the only one. And if God wants me to live, you won't be able to touch me. So I'm not worried. You can try your sorcery. Eini, the Gemara says, really? Is that so? Didn't we just said they're called kshafim because they do stuff in the world and it seems like they control the world? So it certainly sounds like they can affect a person, they can hurt a person. So why is Rabbi Hanina telling her, you can try, because I'm not worried, God runs the world. But Rabbi Yochanan said that they do have an impact, and then they make people think like God's not involved. Shani Rabbi Hanina did not v'shut. The Gemara says, yeah, Rabbi Hanina wasn't worried because he had so many merits that he knew she couldn't touch him. And this is a very strong basis for Maimonides' approach, where Maimonides says there are different levels of hashgacha depending on how pious you are, right? So Avraham Avinu can fall into a furnace and he won't get burnt. That doesn't mean if someone else falls into a furnace, they won't get burnt. Amar Rabbi Evo Bar Nagri, Amar Rabbi Chia Bar Abba. Rabbi Evo Bar Nagri said in the name Rabbi Chia Bar Abba. What does it mean in the Torah? The Torah speaks about the sorcerers of Pharaoh doing things bilateihim. What is lateihim? That's maasei shedim. They were able to summon demons and do their sorcery with demons or whatever shade is. I don't know a better word other than demon, some kind of spirit. And that's what lateihim means. What is lahateihim? That's kshafim. When it has that extra hey, lahateihim, that's where the guy himself has the strength to do it. So latayim, he summons forces to do his sorcery. Lahatayim, he himself has the strength to do the sorcery. That's what's called kishuf. Amar Abai, de kapi damana shed, de lo kapi damana kshafim. Abai says, you want to know if a guy is using demons or not? So if you have a person that needs certain vessels to do his sorcery, so then he's using the forces that be, the demons, whatever they are. But they need a knife that has a black handle. They need a glass, a cup that's made of glass. They have different instruments that they use, and only with that they can do their sorcery. So that's because they're using demons. But if they're not using their specific vessels, that's because they themselves have strengths. That's called kishuf. Guys, I hope you'll sleep tonight. Yeah, I'm not worried about these things. Okay? Amar Abaye. Hilchot kshafim kihilchot Shabbat. Abaye says you should know the laws of kishuf are like the laws of Shabbos. Someone could get the death penalty by stoning. Some are putter but prohibited rabbinically, and some are mutter. If a person does any of the sorcery, then they're punishable by stoning of the death penalty. If someone just does sleight of hand, that's patur v'alasu. That's why I stopped doing magic. When I was a kid, I used to do magic tricks, right? I stopped because it's not so clear it's permissible. It seems like there's a rabbinic prohibition to do things that are sleight of hand. And if you guys will say, but everyone knows it's a trick, you'd be surprised how many kids and adults would come to me after a show and ask me to cure people. So people really believe in this, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to turn you into a frog? I don't do that anymore.
Jews ask you to heal people?
Yeah. People really believe in this, yeah. You'd be surprised. But if I were sitting here and I'd start levitating suddenly, you'd also think so.
Wait, you could levitate?
Yeah. But I told you, I don't do it anymore. I told you, I could turn you into a frog.
What about something cool, like an eagle?
An eagle?
Yeah, like a fly.
But I don't do it anymore. that's what I used to tell the kids when they'd misbehave during a show. I'm going to turn you into a frog. I'm going to turn you into a frog.
Ah.
Books, and apprenticing. Yes. But it's a bad idea, you know. I have suitcases full of magic tricks, which I can't use anymore. You're talking about, like, you know, I had full shows, because I do sometimes in front of the same crowd two or three times. I needed multiple shows, but then I learned it was prohibited. Gamano. Right, that doesn't seem that works. You know, I used to think that would work. So I'd begin every show by showing the kids a trick and explaining how it worked. Like I tell them, you could take a coin, rub it really, really well, and it'll disappear. And then you just show them it was here all along, right? So it's not so hard to understand. You explain it to the kids. Here, watch. I'm sitting here with the coin, right? I look like I grabbed it. I'm looking at it right now. It looks like it's there, but really it was here all along. I explain. I'd always start with one explanation, showing them. It's all sleight of hand, right? But didn't work. They'd still come to me after a show and say, you know, my grandmother's sick, can you cure her? And whatever, everything I said didn't work. And adults did this too. That's a good question. I have in mind I did, and someone must have said it was okay. But then I got a little bit more edumacated, and I realized it's not so okay. Okay, who's next?
I just had a question. I just wanted to read just briefly.
that said that he's using vessels, he's using demons, summoning or whatever. He's not, he's relying on his own strength. Is that relying on his own strength refers to sleight of hand?
No.
No. Kind of
right.
Piety or something, that
I wouldn't say piety. There are, we learned in Nachmanides and we learned in the Ran that there are forces in the world, just like there's electricity, just like the sun gives its heat. There are other forces one can tap into. Now, we also discussed that Maimonides learns that it's all a farce. It's just if you get the person to believe that you have strengths, that's the kishuf in it all. I can tell you, as a kid, I studied this a lot. And one of the things they used, and if you go to England, they'll swear that there are real demons and stuff and that they've seen them. I had a grown man coming to me this year and told me that his father told him about conversations he had with demons.
Hope this wasn't somebody trying to convert.
No, no. This, he told me the following. I don't know if I should tell you. He said that in Yemen, it was well known that there were demons and they would talk to them. And that the demons don't visit places where there's metal. That's why modern society doesn't have demons. Because we have a lot of metal vessels that they stay away from stainless steel and who knows what. So, okay, you say that. And he's convinced this is true. You know, he's talking to me straight-faced, honest, like this is a grown adult. The guy's soon going to be a grandfather. And he's telling me, sure, in Yemen, everyone knew there were, and they spoke to them, and whatever. So, I can't argue with him. I wasn't there. But I can tell you that in England, and if you take the time to research the old books they used to use, I had a library of magic books, right? So there were a few tools that they used. There's psychology. There are a lot of things you can do to get a person to feel like you know things that are deep, dark secrets of theirs. And then they would also use hallucinogenics. They would burn spices in the room where if a person would breathe that smoke, they could look at a mirror and be convinced that their dead grandfather is talking from the mirror. And they'd really see it. You know, if a person's focused on something and they want something and then you burn a hallucinogenic there and then they start smelling the smoke and then they could see everything. Yeah, you guys know what a hallucinogenic is. So there are these agents which if a person puts them in their bloodstream, so then they can hallucinate. Now, the unfortunate thing about this is that people don't have control. And a person can be in the middle of driving and suddenly they'll see their arm like a snake coming at them and they'll veer this way and that way and people end up dying. A friend of mine taught in a school where one of the kids had taken a hallucinogenic and months later the kid was caught in the bathroom trying to cut his arm off because he was convinced his arm was a snake. And he couldn't. So the danger with these things, aside from the moment that people take them, is that takes a long time to get them out of the bloodstream and people die because of that. They're sure that they're seeing this and you can't argue with them. You know, you tell the kid, that's not it. And you never know when it's going to suddenly lift its ugly head again for a few months after a person took it. There's always the danger of the influence coming back. So I'm saying, coming back to here, if we're going with Maimonides' opinion, it's not hard to understand why people really believe this was so. We won't even go with the Gaonim who discussed the ventriloquists and the fact that people knew how to make things happen that way. You know, they knew how to throw their voice, etc. Yeah, but this wasn't our topic. We're off on a big tangent here. Yes. The listeners to Chazon Ish here, I'm not sure if they're going to be pleased with this tangent. Okay. Yes. Okay, we're almost finished. Only two more lines. Yeah. Who am I? In an argument between Rambam and Ramban, I'm going to express an opinion. So let's talk later. Let's go back here. Yes.
All right, so summoning demons also carries the penalty of stoning, right?
It could.
So what about the stories about King Shlomo, about how he...
King Shaul. Shaul or Shlomo?
Shlomo. About how he used the demons to build the holy temple.
When we get there, we'll have to discuss it, or else on a Thursday night, bring it up. We'll try. Yes, Yaakov, later.
Well, it's on Rabbi Akiva and Moshe's vision of Rabbi Akiva, which we're just doing.
So maybe let's just finish the Chazon Ish and then we'll get back to it. So you guys wanted this broader session, do you still? Because there's a few more interesting points. Yes? Okay. Mutar lechatchila. We said that there are certain things that seem to be like sorcery. Some are prohibited and punishable by death. Some are prohibited rabbinically. And then some are permissible. The following story. Rabbi Chanin and Rabbi Yoshaya. Kol malei shabata. Every Friday afternoon. Havaski bilchot yitzira. They would sit and read Sefer Yetzirah. You guys know what that is? So, what is Sefer Yetzirah? Sefer Yetzirah is a book that we have on tradition that which, okay, I'll just read Rashi and translate, right? That way it'll all make sense, right? With the Sefer Yetzirah, they would know how to combine the different letters of God's name that were used for the creation of the world. And that's not called sorcery. That's part of God's works in the world. By using God's holy name, they could create things. Yeah? Who asked about the golem last Thursday night? Oh, so this is the Gemara I quoted you about the golem. Umivrilu igla tilta. Using this book, as they were learning it, they didn't even mean to do it. Like as they were learning it, a goat would be formed. Vachlile. Then they would eat it. That was like their Friday night meal. Okay, they're learning this book. And whoops. Okay, not whoops, but this was part of their learning. Now, I don't think all of this should be taken literally. For sure, according to the Rambam, not. And even not according to the Rambam. We read this and it's very easy to get carried away with the literal understanding here. But, okay, let's go further. The sorcerers tell Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. So from here we see that the demons can't do anything less than the size of a se'ora, of barley. And God was creating lice that were inflicting the Egyptians. So they said, this is a finger of God. Rav Papa said, they can't even make something big like a camel. The only thing is that they gather things. They shift things from place to place, and that's how they do things. Rav said to Rav Chia, Ledidi Chazili, I personally witnessed Hahutaya, an Arab merchant, Deshakle le Safsre, he took out his sword, Vegaide le Gamla, and cut up his camel into pieces, Vetarafle Betavla, and he took his magic bell and shook the bell, vikam, and the camel's pieces formed together, and the camel stood on its feet again. So that's what he says, I saw. Amale lebatar hachi. So he said to him, damu pauta mihavi. He said, tell me, after the camel got up and walked away, did you see any blood or feces on the ground? So Rabbi Chia said to Rav, he was a magician, just like the common magicians. He tricked you. It's all sleight of hand. I could do that trick too, guys. You know, cutting a woman in half, putting her back together again, cutting a camel into pieces, putting him back together again. It's all sleight of hand. Rabbi Chia said to Rav, you thought you saw sorcery. I'm telling you, if it was real sorcery, then they wouldn't have put him back together again with the blood and the feces. If you didn't see any blood or feces on the floor, it was all a trick. So it looked to you like they did that. Yeah, I understand. Okay. Ze'iri ikla Alexandria shem Mitzrayim. Ze'iri came to Alexandria in Egypt. Zavan chamra. He bought a donkey. Ki hava mehadrin lach. I skipped. Kimata lashkuya maya, pasha vekam gamla duskinita. When he came to give the camel to drink, so the camel melted, and suddenly there was no camel. And all he saw was a plank. So they were able to make this plank look like a donkey, and it melted when he came to give it to drink. They said to him, look, you're a big rabbi, so we're going to give you back your money, even though we tricked you. They said, here in Egypt, no one buys anything without pouring some water on it and seeing if it melts. Come on, but what you doing here? Don't you know we do business here? Of course we tricked you. But okay, you're a good guy, so we're going to give you back your money. So there was a lot of trickery. Yanai came to a host, and they came to give him to drink, and he saw that they were whispering as they were giving him the drink. So he figured they're saying some incantation. He took some of the water, poured it on the ground, and suddenly he saw there were scorpions in the water. He said, no problem. I was going to drink from your water. Let me give you some of my water to drink. Where are we? So he made believe he drank the water. When he saw it turned into scorpions, he saw there were scorpions on the ground. He didn't, but he put it near his lips and made believe he was drinking. Then he said to them, hey guys, you gave me such great water, I drank yours. Let me give you some of mine. So he gave them to drink, and the rest of the story you guys will look up on your own. But what am I going to do here? You're going to ask me what all this means. Okay, so he gave them to drink, and the woman turned into a donkey. So Yanai rode on her and came to the marketplace, and her friend came and was able to undo what Yanai did, and everyone saw him riding on a woman in the marketplace. Suddenly he's riding, and her best friend undid what he did. So now he's there sitting in the marketplace, and there's a woman like he's riding on. Okay, so that's the end of the story in the Talmud. Now you'll ask me, what does this mean? I said, don't ask me, okay? So I never agreed to tell the story.
Yeah, but I said that I will ask. I made that clear.
Good. Fine, okay. So, the verse says, and this is actually why we quoted this whole Gemara, that Tzfardea covered all of Egypt. So Rabbi Akiva said it was one big frog that covered Egypt. So Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah said to him, Akiva, what you doing trying to figure out Haggadah? You finish what you have to say and go back to learning Halacha, because you this isn't where you belong. said, you go teach Halacha. So this is what we're quoting now. This is why the Chazon Ish quoted this piece of Talmud, that Rabbi Akiva tried to say it was one big frog, and Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah said, Akiva, finish what you have to say. You belong in Halacha. You don't belong in Darshanim. Back to the Chazon Ish. So the Chazon Ish said,
what about the woman?
In a second. That Rabbi Akiva was told, finish what you have to say because we need you back to the laws because you're so sharp when it comes to the laws of Torah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah tells him, we need your focus in Halacha. And Rashi explains, we need you in the most severe questions of Halacha. And in those questions, you're so sharp, but not when it comes to saying Haggadah, giving Midrashim on the verses, that's not where you're sharp. So we see again, the example of the Talmud for someone big in Torah was Rabbi Akiva. And yet we see that Rabbi Akiva wasn't the greatest orator. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, leave that, that's not for you. And yet Rabbi Akiva is called great in Torah. The great one that Moshe Rabbeinu says is great. So the Chaznish is coming to hammer home that point, that being great in Torah is being great in the laws of Torah, understanding the halachot, the laws of the Torah.